This is Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors. I'm Kev Jackson. Our show is sponsored by DS Beverages, Anheuser-Busch distributor for Paul Bunyan Country, Ace on the Lake on Lake Bemidji's South Shore, Bonded Lock and Key, your home for Liberty Safes, Pepsi 9 Omni of Bemidji, Timberline Sports and Convenience in Black Duck, and Clear Brook Electric. Well, believe it or not, we have a new fishing season starting on Monday. Yes, March 1st is the start of the new fishing season. What this means for you is if you're going to be out on the ice, still doing some ice fishing, you can't fish for walleyes, first of all. Secondly, it means you need a new license. And thirdly, it means, due to the Sunfish Initiative, there are many lakes across the state with new panfish regulations. We're going to get the details on that with a couple of guys from the DNR, Acting Bemidji Area Supervisor Andy Thompson, and Brainerd Area Fisheries Supervisor Mark Bacigalupi. And on top of that, more on Bemidji State University's Wildlife Biology Program and some great projects they're involved in. We'll get the details from Dr. Jake House. Up first today, it's Andy Thompson. We're going to talk a lot about panfish today and sunfish in particular because of the Quality Sunfish Initiative. Its work has been done, and we're moving forward to the next step. First of all, Andy, thanks for taking time today. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for having me on your show.
Well, we're going to have some changes coming up March 1st, and we're going to delve into what those are a little bit later on. But let's go back to the beginning and discuss the Quality Sunfish Initiative. Why did it get started, and what was the goal?
Well, I guess it really started, it was probably about 7 years ago when we formed the Panfish Work Group and Technical Committee. The Panfish Work Group is made up of a number of constituents from around the state that represent different interests related to fishing, whether it be resort owners or, you know, pro anglers or just everyday anglers. And when that committee was first convened, there was some pretty strong interest in tightening up some of the harvest regulations on panfish in general and sunfish in particular. Sunfish rose to the top right away as being the number one issue that they wanted to tackle. And so along with the work group, the DNR fisheries section put together a panfish technical committee to provide technical information, you know, a lot of our data that we've collected and some of the biology of sunfish and panfish species. To that work group to give them some good information to work with. And that's kind of when it got started and it took a while to decide what to do. Initially there was a strong support for a change to the statewide bag limit for sunfish, which is currently at 20. And they wanted to just roll that back for all lakes in the state, which probably would have been easier in some ways, but in other ways it may not have happened. We kind of determined at that point that we just didn't have the support to do that. And realizing that a lot of lakes, a 20 fish bag limit isn't going to hurt anything in a lot of our lakes that in the state. So we kind of took a different direction and went towards individual lake management. So that's kind of what led to the proposal that was rolled out last year. We went through a big public input process last summer and had great success. Most of the lakes that were proposed are going to be in effect for reduced limits starting March 1st.
I've talked to a number of people who are big aficionados of sunfish and panfish and bluegills, and long before this initiative even started and as it was going on, they kind of all had the same thing. We've still got good sunfishing in this state. We've still got good sizes in a number of lakes. We're better off than a lot of states. We need to find a way to stay that way, and this is what that kind of addresses.
Yeah, that's right, and especially in the Bemidji area, we recognize that. We still have quality sunfish populations in this area, and for a number of reasons. One is that we're actually kind of on the northern fringe of the sunfish range. Bluegills in particular is kind of the flagship species when it comes to sunfish. But because of that, a lot of our lakes actually didn't have bluegills, you know, 50, 60 years ago, and they've gradually expanded their range and into more and more lakes. So our populations haven't been around really all that long. And also because we're so far north, their recruitment of sunfish is pretty variable, which leads to lower density populations in a lot of our lakes. And those low densities are key to producing the quality sizes that we see around here. And, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, people weren't thinking too much about going to Bemidji for panfishing, but that's changed. We've become kind of a destination for panfish anglers.
You talk about that low density. The danger of that, of course, is panfish bite so easily, you can empty out a lake in a real hurry.
Yeah, because of that, they're very vulnerable, and, you know, they grow pretty slowly, especially up north, but the growth rates are adequate to for them to achieve the large sizes, but it still takes them a while to get there. And so it takes, you know, as we take them out, it takes quite a while to replace them. So they are very vulnerable to harvest.
So different parts of the state have different issues, different types of lakes, different things going on. You guys put together some new regulations that go into effect March 1st. There's got to be more than one, I presume.
Yeah, regulations?
Yeah.
Yes, there's actually two that have been proposed and are going to be implemented. It's we took the approach of going with a daily limit, similar to how yellow perch are managed with a 20 fish daily limit and a 40 fish possession limit. So these are going to be daily limits that go hand in hand with the statewide 20 fish possession limit. So they're either 5 fish daily limits or 10 fish daily limits. And it varies a little bit by lake and especially by what part of the state we're in. I think most of the 10 fish limits were proposed a little further south of Bemidji, down in more in central Minnesota or southern Minnesota, where they actually have a little bit higher densities and better growth rates and can probably replace those fish a little more quickly. So in the Bemidji area, we're looking at all the 5 fish daily limits.
And we've seen, Andy, in several lakes where that was implemented as a special reg. Paimush is a big example I keep hearing and know that's very true. I think they've done the same thing in Black Duck. And we've seen some really nice, in those particular lakes, bluegills happening because of those regulations.
Yeah, in Paimush, we had quality sunfish already in that lake, and they were put in as more of a protective measure, and it's really worked. That lake has held up for quite a long time. It started with a 10 fish limit, quite a number of years ago, and after a period of time, we were monitoring that population pretty closely, and we were starting to see some declines with that 10 fish limit. And we modified it to a 5 fish limit, and it's been going strong ever since. And it really has worked well. And we've got several other examples of that around the state, and especially in the northern part of the state, in Beltrami County and Itasca County over in the Grand Rapids area. There's some good lakes where the 5 fish limit has performed really well.
So we are expanding that to a number of different lakes. I think you told me maybe around 24 or so lakes in this particular area?
Yeah, in the Bemidji work area, which is primarily Beltrami County, it's going to be the Turtle River chain of lakes and the Cass chain of lakes. You know, the Cass Lake system has some of the lakes in that system are pretty good sunfish lakes. And while others are maybe not as known for sunfish, but they all have the capacity to produce some quality sunfish. But because they're so broadly connected and people can just boat from one lake to another, the regulation, you know, for enforcement purposes just has to be uniform. And then there's a few, you know, individual lakes around in Beltrami County, one in Clearwater County, that aren't connected to other lakes that are also in on the list here.
Now, I know there's way more than, you know, 24 lakes in the area that have panfish in it. So you kind of narrowed it and you kind of pointed to a few lakes and went that route. So what kind of was the determining factor in which determined we're going to do this here but not here?
Yeah, we tried to really look at lakes that have the either have quality sunfish populations already or have the capability to produce them based on, you know, past history. You know, some of the lakes have had and been known for producing really nice sized sunfish and don't anymore. But we think that potential is probably still there, and it's probably just been harvest that has kind of cropped off that top end. So we looked at growth rates and the productivity of the lakes and the populations that are already there, and tried to pick ones that really are going to be, you know, they'll stay high quality populations if they're managed correctly, and that's kind of the gist of it, that we, you know, we tried to go for the lakes that have the best potential.
And that's going into effect on March 1st of this year, so just down the road here. We mentioned a few of them. We do not have time, obviously, to mention every single lake. So how do people find out so they make sure they don't make a mistake come March 1st?
Yeah, well, we're going to have signs at all the public accesses. They're going to be kind of temporary signs at first because we don't have the permanent signs yet, but we'll get something up there. And then on the DNR website, if you get on the sunfish page, search for sunfish, there'll be a list there. And I think I'm going to try to get a list on our area webpage, which is also linked through the DNR website, bemidji.fisheries.com. webpage.
Okay.
Or you can send an email to bemidji.fisheries@state.mn.us, and I can reply with a list.
All right. I got to tell you something that you probably will appreciate. I don't know if you heard this week's interview. I had Garrett Severe on from Slap Seeker Guide Service down in Ottertail, and he was on the group. He was part of the initiative. And he has a lot more appreciation for what you guys go through after dealing with everything you have to do.
Yeah, it's a slow moving process, and we wish we could move things along faster, but there's a lot of steps and a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different interests out there, and you've got to you've got to communicate with all of those people, and you've got to take all of their interest in at heart when you try to make a decision that's going to benefit everybody or as many people as possible.
Yeah, and that's one thing to note about this sunfish initiative is that we really had strong public support for it. We had about about 85% out of I think it was 3,700 people that replied to our online survey app that supported reduced bag limits in general, which is really, really good. And that's been some of the best public, supportive public feedback we've gotten on any of our regulation proposals.
Well, I know, you know, people are passionate about their fishing up here, and they care deeply. I think we have an incredibly well-educated overall fishing populace who really does understand, and just from what I've seen, we got people who understand it. The average fisherman in Minnesota understands things seemingly better than maybe other parts in the nation. They just seem really educated.
Yeah, we really do have a very well-educated angling public, and they're good anglers, too, and it's fun to be a good angler, and it's fun to see all those people really getting into it, but that puts a lot of pressure on our populations, too. So that's why we're trying to be proactive with this and keep these quality sunfish populations around.
And again, that goes into effect Monday, March 1st, all of these new regulations on these lakes. So check that out. The other thing about March 1st, we think of March still being the end of last year because we're still ice fishing. But as far as licensing goes, that's a new year. And if you're going out after March 1st, you better have a new license.
Yep. Remember to pick up your new license. I know I've purchased my license on my phone in my vehicle just before going out on the ice in early March before, because I suddenly realized I needed a new one.
Yeah, and it's very convenient. Obviously there's plenty of places to pop in and do that, but like you said, you can do it right on your phone now.
Yep.
Anything else we want to talk about before we wrap it up today?
Well, can't think of anything offhand unless you got more questions.
Well, we talked about it a little bit before going on air. It's a little bit frustrating for you guys. Everybody's still kind of operating at home. So what are the types of things you guys are doing in this off season as we get ready for 2021?
Yeah, well, like you say, we're mostly working at home. I get into the office a fair bit just to check on the place and make sure everything's working fine and the electricity's on and all that. The crew has taken their microscopes and various equipment they need at home to age fish and write reports. That's one of our big winter activities is working up all the survey data that we collect throughout the summer and make sense of it all and write some reports and get those submitted by spring just in time to go outside again. And we're working on planning as well, planning for the next year, and we're very close to having approvals to get out and do our normal spring work. We didn't get a lot of that done last spring, so we're hoping to get out and take walleye eggs and operate our hatcheries and stock fry and do our spring assessment work and musky eggs. It's a long list.
Andy, thanks for taking the time today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That is Acting Bemidji Area Fisheries Supervisor Andy Thompson. Coming up later in the show, we'll take a look at the Brainerd area and see what lakes might be affected there. Mark Bacigalupi, the Area Fisheries Supervisor, joins us. But up next, we're going to talk wildlife biology with Dr. Jake House from Bemidji State University. This is Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors. Bunyan Country Outdoors, and once again we're talking wildlife biology from Bemidji State University. This time Dr. Jake House joins us to discuss a number of projects he's been involved in. Jake, thank you for taking time to be here today and chatting with us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Kev. Happy to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about you. How did you get into this field? What made you want to pursue wildlife biology?
Sure. Well, so I started at BSU and was kind of, I went to college because my parents said it was something I had to do. I didn't really know what the next step was, and I was, just kind of taking some random classes, and I was really always a very passionate bow hunter. So I saw a course titled Animal Behavior, and I thought, I'm going to take that, and maybe that'll give me some insight into where I can find, some better hunting and where I can be a more successful bow hunter. And when I found out that there's an actual field of wildlife management and wildlife ecology, that I immediately walked down to the registrar's office, changed my degree program, and haven't looked back since. it's like a lot of our students at BSU. I got into this field because I like to be outdoors. I like hunting and fishing.
Yeah, it seems like that tends to be, I would venture to guess, anybody I've talked to in this field, whether they went to Bemidji State or any other university, 90%+ are people that they fished and hunted growing up, and it's just something that seemed like a natural for them.
Yep, yeah, it's a way to turn a passion into a career, which is not always a good thing, but it worked out in my case.
So 2006 to 2010, you were at Bemidji State University. Didn't really actually have a wildlife program per se there.
No.
You had wildlife classes, but not a program.
Right. Yeah. So we had my degree was actually in biology, which is typically, you know, our department was sending a lot of like pre-med and things like that. At the time, it was just Dr. Liz Rafe, who was teaching some wildlife courses. I took, you know, I gobbled up everything that she was, every course she was offering. And when I went to start applying to graduate school, you know, there were a lot of professors I was applying to who were saying, well, you're not a wildlife student. We don't recognize the name of this university. And it probably held me back for a little bit. It wasn't until after I had left that Dr. Hiller, who I think you had on the show last week, really launched the wildlife program. So it's great to see what's happened here since I've left, and it's really awesome to be able to come back and join a university that means so much to me, but now a program that's really kind of taken off.
It really has taken off. Very, very popular program. Certainly a lot of students are flocking to Bemidji because, as Brian pointed out, it's an ideal place, not just because you have great teachers and classrooms. You've got a living classroom, you know, for miles and miles and miles around.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's not many universities you can go to that we can, you know, be a short drive away from Black Bear Denchecks and you know, Wolf Howl surveys, and we've got a robust deer population right here in town. So, yeah, we've got, you know, the classroom is as soon as you step outside the door.
So Delaware is where you got your master's and PhD. Tell us a little bit about your time there.
Yeah, so I was actually up hunting here in northern Minnesota when I got the call from a professor out on the East Coast who was looking for a graduate student. I hadn't even applied to the program. They just heard through the grapevine that I had done some work for some other folks in kind of the deer world. And when I got the job offer, I was super excited. You know, getting into graduate school is kind of a competitive position. But I had to look up where Delaware was. I knew it was east of the Mississippi, and that's about all I knew about the state. So packed up my bags, drove about as far east as you can go, and I spent 8 years out there. So I did my master's looking at chronic wasting disease management actually in the state of Maryland. Delaware doesn't have CWD yet. So we were looking at the chronic wasting disease in Maryland, looking at deer densities, some human dimensions work, you know, how the hunters were feeling about the management actions. Then finished my master's and then started working in Delaware. And this was actually a project where we were putting GPS collars on adult bucks and adult does and looking at their movement in response to hunting pressure, some of their survival rates on the differences between public and private land. And a lot of management implications came from that research. And we also looked at some fawn survival stuff. And Delaware's got a really unique ecosystem in that there are no natural predators to deer. Obviously, there's humans, but there's no wolves, bobcats, coyotes, black bear, and there haven't been for over 100 years. You know, they've been extirpated from that Delaware Peninsula, and they have not been able to recolonize. So it's a really unique system to be able to study things like, you know, deer survival and fawn survival.
And how did you make your way back to Bemidji State?
Well, I always knew I wanted to come back to Minnesota, and it the timing just worked out perfectly that Bemidji had been petitioning for a specialist with large mammal ecology, particularly white-tailed deer, and they had been trying to fill that position for years. Finally, they got approval right at the same time I was finishing up my PhD. So I had known Brian just through the field, and he had been kind of pushing for me to apply, and I was more than thrilled to be able to come back. So everything worked out, the kind of stars aligned, and I'm just absolutely thrilled to be here.
So one of the things you have done and the BSU has done the last few years is work. Is it with the city of Bemidji or is it with the DNR?
Yep.
City of Bemidji.
Well, it's with the city of Bemidji. There's a deer management committee that oversees the kind of the deer overabundance issue within city limits. And they've been managing a special city hunt for many, many years. It predates even my time here as an undergraduate student. And part of the management approach is to really kind of evaluate the effectiveness of the hunt. Is it actually having any type of impact on the deer population? So every fall, we have our students from the wildlife program drive around city limits, set transects within the city limits, and they're doing spotlight surveys for deer abundance.
Okay.
We then take that data, and in one of my courses, wildlife management techniques, we have them analyze the data to come up with a year abundance estimate for the city of Bemidji.
And obviously we haven't been able to do that this year because of COVID.
Right. Yeah.
But what have you found overall the last few years that you have been doing it?
So we've been surveying three separate city wards, Ward 2 up by the airport, Ward 4 and down by the southwest edge of town, and then Ward 5, which is over on the southeast edge of town. And there's a difference in the deer density between those three wards. In general, though, the deer population is increasing in all three of them, or at least it's not decreasing. Now, the issue there is some might say, well, look, the city hunt isn't being effective. It probably is. We know how many deer we're removing from the landscape, but we're just not able to keep up with the way the population is growing.
Any thoughts as to why the population is growing so strong within the city limits?
Yeah, I mean, I have some of my own pet theories that I'd like to, you know, start looking at from a research perspective. What I think might be happening is we still have these kind of refuge areas within the city limits that aren't able to hunt. You know, whether those be, you know, small suburban yards or small woodlots that aren't able to safely support bow hunters. I think the deer are kind of learning to use those as refuges, so they're able to kind of escape some hunting pressure by utilizing these areas that aren't able to be hunted. There could be a number of things going on. It could just be that there aren't enough places to hunt to limit the deer population from a archery hunt perspective.
So overall, what would be the negatives of too many deer in the city limits?
Well, that statement, too many deer, is really kind of a loaded statement. There's a few different ways to look at that. There's too many deer from a biological perspective, and then too many deer from a social perspective. From a purely biological perspective, to say we have too many deer is maybe a bit of a stretch. We have, you know, plenty of food in the form of shrubbery and gardens in those areas to support probably even a higher deer density. But from a social perspective, it's what are people willing to tolerate. And from that perspective, we're probably at too many deer. You know, that comes from the risk of vehicle collisions, damage to agricultural fields, damage to rose bushes and gardens. It's a different number for everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a farmer, that too many deer is might be, you know, any deer might be too many deer. If you're a deer hunter, you want to see more deer and everything in between.
So I'm assuming that once COVID clear and things can return to some semblance of normalcy, you guys will get right back out there and see where we're at right now.
Yeah, absolutely. The students are itching to go. They've been, you know, as eager to get out into the field as we are. They were super disappointed this year that we weren't able to do the deer surveys. So, we're going to jump right back into it as soon as we can.
Another project you've been working on has been with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right, yeah. So one of the cool things about coming to BSU is when I was working at Delaware, there's so many faculty within a wildlife program, right? These programs are so large. You might have 10, 15, 20 wildlife faculty. So everyone has their kind of specialty niche research, and you're kind of expected to, you know, stay in your lane. If you're the deer researcher, you're expected to do deer research. Coming to Bemidji, we had, you know, three wildlife faculty members now with me coming in a year and a half ago. So there's you can kind of spread your wings a little bit and do some research on some species and taxa that maybe were a little outside your wheelhouse. And that's exactly what I've been doing with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. So we launched a graduate project. It's Kim Shelton is the graduate student who's going to be working on that project. She's a local student. She graduated from BSU's wildlife program last year, rolled right into a master's project with me. And the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe has been a little bit concerned about their snowshoe hare population. It's a culturally significant animal to them. And they naturally go through these kind of population fluctuations. They might go, will increase for several years, peak at some certain abundance,
and then they'll start to decline for, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years. And they go through these kind of 10-year cycles of boom and bust. The problem on the Leech Lake Reservation is they kind of got stuck in this bust level, this kind of low population abundance level, and they don't seem to be cycling back up, and we're not sure why. So the project I undertook with them was to look at predator abundance, anything that eats a snowshoe hare that is a mammal. So fisher, pine marten, and bobcat in particular. And we want to look at what types of habitats are those predators keying in on, how many of them are out on the landscape, and could that be something that is controlling the snowshoe hare population and preventing them from kind of rebounding like they naturally would.
Have you found anything preliminarily at this point?
No, we're in our first field season right now. Kim's out there collecting data. We do know that predation is probably what's limiting the population, but we're not sure why. It probably relates back to habitat. Snowshoe hares need a lot of very thick cedar habitat, thick escape cover, and we're getting less and less of that habitat on the landscape. So if we can identify that maybe those few pockets of cedar habitat are what the predators are really keying in on, and there's just not enough safety cover for these hares, then we can prioritize restoring that habitat.
I always find these things to be very, very fascinating, whether it be wildlife, or I talk a lot to, aquatic biologists and projects and getting fish populations restored, things like that. It's really, really interesting. I'm just a layperson, of course. But the one thing that always strikes me is the sheer volume of patience people need when they're involved in these kinds of projects. This is not something you fix in a couple of months.
Right, yeah. I mean, this is something we had kind of originally started talks about shortly after I started here at BSU. So, this project probably won't wrap up for another 2 years. Then we'll make our management recommendations, and then management actions can start. So these are very long-term project.
I'm going to circle back to when you were choosing colleges. Now, you indicated you were not a biology major when you got here. You saw a class offering and kind of steered you that way. But was it the outdoors aspects of BSU that brought you to Bemidji State to begin with?
Yeah, that was a huge part of it. It's funny how you bring this up. I was just talking to my wife about this the other day. I was a pretty good high school student, and I had gone to talk to my high school counselor, and I had I recall this really well. She had said, okay, well, who do you want to apply to? And I had, I was involved in extracurriculars at 4.0 GPA. Scored really well on the ACTs. And I said, well, the only school I'm looking at is Bemidji State. And that was because of exactly what you said. There's lakes right outside the front door, all sorts of public land to hunt and fish. And he said, well, you could probably get into any university in the country. I said, no, that's I don't want a safety school. I don't want anything. I want to go to BSU. So I had a few friends from high school who were coming here as well, and we had come up to visit them and, done four-wheeling, fishing, hunting. So my mind was made up before I had even graduated high school.
Okay, so even though that wasn't the major you were pursuing, it was that aspect that brought you here.
It was that lifestyle, right? Yeah.
And
I think that draws a lot of our students.
Absolutely. In fact, I hear even coaches who are bringing football and basketball and hockey players in. That lures a lot of them too, because they just love that aspect that they can pop out the dorms and hit the water and go fishing, or run to the woods in about 10 minutes and go deer hunting or whatever.
Part of our job as professors is every once in a while we need to meet with potential students and their families, and at first I kind of would always tentatively ask, well, are you into hunting or fishing? Big into that. And so now I just use that as one of the first things I lead off with is, hey, look at all the lakes we have, look at all the access to the public land. We have a 240-acre research woods just on the northeast edge of Lake Bemidji, Hobson Forest. We do all sorts of cool research out there. So it's a really big selling point for us.
All right. Anything, I mean, and again, I know everything is on hold, but was there any other things you guys were looking at that kind of were in the hopper before COVID hit?
You know, we had a few grants pending. There was nothing really firmed up. Once we can start getting back on campus, I think there's going to be a few doors that open up for some minor, you know, some minor projects up in Hobson. But it put a damper on getting things kind of kicked off. But we're eager to get back and get that going.
How many students in the wildlife biology program right now?
It fluctuates quite a bit. I think we're at about 140 or so full-time students right now. But, you know, it class sizes are increasing. So while nationally incoming freshmen are going down, our wildlife biology program is actually increasing. So, that's a good position to be in right now in today's climate.
Well, certainly we have a lot of people within about 100 miles of Bemidji listening to this, and down in Brainerd, we actually have a lot of people who will be hearing this interview, and we are podcasting nationwide. So this is a great little commercial for the BSU Wildlife Biology Program, and people in particular who are interested in the outdoors would be the people listening to this. If you're, thinking of college in the next year or two, definitely BSU might be a place to look. First thing they should do is probably go to the website, maybe do an application. Can they call you guys? How does that all work?
Yeah, they can actually reach out to us directly. The nice thing about being a smaller program like we are is you get a lot of interaction directly with our professors. So, check out the BSU website, but then you can also look at the faculty web pages for Dr. Liz Rave, myself, and Dr. Brian Hiller. We've got our contact information out there. Reach out to us, and we'll be happy to answer any questions about the program or point you in the right direction if it comes to an application.
All right, very cool. Dr. Jake House is an assistant professor of biology, wildlife specialist at Bemidji State University. Great conversation today. I find this stuff really interesting, and I appreciate you opening up and sharing with us. And, Jake, enjoy the rest of winter. Let's hope it warms up a little bit here soon.
For sure, yeah. I need to get out shed hunting. My dog's been itching to get out.
Thanks, Jake. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
Up next, we get back to bluegills. Mark Machigalupi is the Brainerd Area Fisheries Supervisor. We'll find out what Brainerd Area lakes will be affected by the new panfish regulations and what he thinks it'll mean for pan fishing in the Brainerd area. This is Paul Bunyan Country Outdoors. We're checking in with Mark Machigalupi. He is the Brainerd Area Fisheries Supervisor. And Mark, thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So we've talked to a few different people. I talked to Garrett Sevier, who, of course, was on the Panfish Initiative Task Force. I talked to Andy Thompson in the Bemidji Area's office. Now we're going to talk to you in the Brainerd Area office. And first up for you, Mark, why don't you run down the lakes in the Brainerd area that will be affected by the new regulation going into effect March 1st?
Yeah, we have a few lakes in the Brainerd area. We call it the Brainerd area. Specifically, my office manages Crow Wing County and Lower Cass. In your listening area, that might also include Morrison County's Little Falls area maybe, and they have some lakes as well. But we've proposed 9 lakes in what we call the Brainerd area for this Quality Sunfish Initiative. I'll just run down the list.
Sure. They're
lakes that people might be familiar with, chasing some of the nicer sunfish that we still do have remaining around here, and we're trying to maintain that quality, that size structure. So Borden Lake is one of them out towards the Garrison area by Mille Lacs. East Twin in Nisswa. Edward Lake, nice big lake south of Pelican Lake, Gladstone, the Mississippi River between the Brainerd Dam and up to the Highway 6 crossing, North Long Lake, people know that one because they drive by it all the time and see people fishing out there, Perch Lake, some smaller lake in Baxter, Upper Mission and the whitefish chain is still remaining some really nice quality fish out there, and we expect that we can improve and maintain the quality sunfish size that we've seen in these water bodies. That's one of the main goals. And also a big part of the initiative in the Brainerd area is to include crappie in the bag limit of five. So you could keep five crappie and five bluegill daily under this new regulation. And remember that it's a daily limit and not a possession limit. We've maintained that you could keep your statewide possession limit of 10 crappie at home and 20 sunfish. So that's just something for anglers to remember.
Okay. So, Mark, the lakes that you have just mentioned to me, now these are lakes that you guys feel still have good, solid sizes and numbers in them, and we're just trying to build on that.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, when we've been talking about this regulation over the past 5 years or so, you know, one approach would be to just go with tightened bag limits statewide. And it, one of the reasons that didn't make sense is because many lakes just aren't going to have those nicer sized fish anyways in there. They've just never shown that. And these lakes that I mentioned are lakes that have shown that potential over the years to have those nicer fish in there.
The people I've talked to here in the Bemidji area and, you know, Garrett down in the Otter Tail area all seem to have received pretty good positive feedback from the angling public in their areas. What are you hearing from anglers in the Brainerd area about this?
Yeah, the proposal's been received pretty well around here as well. I didn't have the specific numbers summarized here, but it is generally positive. And, you know, we've received some information from our statewide input. We got 3,700 comments, you know, at these online, at all our online input and our public meetings. So had a lot of good comments coming in, and 85% of the respondents are supportive of the initiative. So that's really good. And then we know in Brainerd that we get local anglers and visitors alike. So that's important to remember when we're getting input on these area lakes.
Do you have any examples in the Brainerd area of lakes that have been hit hard by too much harvest of panfish and you know, really have lost maybe what they used to have? Are there any good examples you could share with us on that?
Well, that gets a little bit tough because the specific harvest numbers to really say, you know, the quality declined after fishery got hit hard, we really have to go more on anecdotal information. The best information is to run a creel survey, of course, and we run creels when as much around here as we can. We have really good people doing that. We've done a creel survey most recently on North Long Lake, and we're just working on that data this winter. Unfortunately, I don't have anything ready for you, but you guys kind of know the hit list of lakes that that get hit around here, and North Long was really one of the ones a few years ago that had been experienced that high pressure level, and we hear more about the crappies around here, people concerned about too many crappies being pulled out, more so than sunfish, but we know that quality sunfish size has declined around here, mirroring the statewide trend as well. So I'd probably refrain to mention too many specific waters, but
okay. Well, it's interesting you bring up crappie. That was not, of course, a factor in the Bemidji area, but it is down there. I do know that you guys get a ton of fishing pressure there, and crappie fisheries can be hit hard. You know, the word gets out that there's a big crappie bite somewhere, and you can wipe out a crappie population for a number of years in very short order if you're not careful. So this should be very helpful.
Yep, you know, we know you can really target them when they're congregated in the spring warm-up period and around the spawning on nests. And then nowadays, you know, people can fish comfortably for long periods of time in the winter. So, and that's yep. kind of an emerging trend we're watching. So,
yeah, and of course, this law goes into effect very shortly, Monday, March 1st. It's in effect, and that's the same day you need your new licenses, so keep that in mind as well. But so if you're going to be out fishing in, you know, next week, you need to know what lakes these are involved in. And you can go on the website, the DNR website, to find that out. I know there are going to be some postings. Is there any place else people can go to find out which lakes are going to be affected?
Yeah, mndnr.gov is the best kind of quick way to go through that and maybe search sunfish. That'll have the whole listing there. I appreciate you getting the word out on this, because you're right, the March 1st will pop up soon, right when people are getting their, you know, maybe their ice houses off the ice and maybe getting a new license. So a few things to remember. We're going to try and have signs up as soon as we can. They're not ready to go as of March 1st. And so, you know, getting the word out here, and we're going to be working on some more communications in addition to radio interviews like this. So just being tuned in to that.
Okay. So, Mark, as long as I have you on the line, for our Bemidji folks who probably haven't heard much from you and the Brainerd area before, talk a little bit about the Brainerd area. We know they got a ton of lakes with a ton of fish on them. Overall, how has the hard water season been as far as you've been able to tell?
Well, I'd say maybe a little slow. You know, we started out with some, you know, people struggled to get on bigger waters because we just didn't have the ice cover, the good ice that we needed. And we had a pretty good period for a while there. And now we're, you know, it's just a little bit slow right now. And walleye's wrapping up here just in 6 days or so. So got to get out while you can. Now we have a lot of good ice and really good travel conditions around here. So people are out there doing it, that's for sure. We're seeing people fishing in maybe record numbers. So that's a great part. People can get out and get some fresh air, go fishing.
Soft water, hard water, overall picture of fishing in the Brainerd area the last few years. Has there been any big concerns out there, AIS or otherwise, or has everything been pretty good for you guys?
Well, we've been trying to gather what information we can on the AIS issues and their effects on fishing. It's definitely a focus of ours in the management area of Brainerd. There's some mixed signals out there in some ways. People are trying to adjust to clearer water, fishing in clearer waters. That's been part of the struggle, I think, more so than population changes or maybe behavioral changes by fish. Responding in clear water. The fishing grounds have changed a little bit because, you know, plant beds have changed. There's maybe more algae growth in some of our zebra mussel lakes. So there's always changes and challenges out there. The populations have been hanging on, and we're, like I said, we've been seeing a lot of people out there fishing, and pressure is something we're kind of concerned about and watching. I mean, we want people out there fishing, but of course your fellow fishermen know that you just don't want someone right next to you when you're fishing. So
yeah, as far as fish populations in the various lakes, are things pretty much the way you want them to be in the Brainerd area? Do you have any specific lakes where you have some projects going on, you're trying to change some things besides the panfish that we talked about already?
Yeah, we have a lot of projects going on. We're trying to monitor the effects of zebra mussels on walleye populations. That's something we're keeping pretty close track on, as close a track as anyone on, in a couple of specific waters like Gull Lake, the Gull Chain, the Pelican Lake, 8,000 acres, out of Breezy Point. We have some special yellow perch work that we've concentrated on this area, more examination of perch populations than we've done in the past. Hmm. We know walleye and pike species depend very much on those perch as a forage base, as well as perch's importance as, you know, if they could get some bigger ones, how much people like going to fish for those. So, yeah, there's the, you know, the fisheries are overall in good shape around here, and we're watching for those emerging trends that are going on out there.
Mark, how long have you been working in the Brainerd area?
I started in the Brainerd area in 2010. I've been with the DNR. It'll be 20 years in July. So it's been a really rewarding career. I expect to hope to stay on for the foreseeable future.
Well, certainly. I mean, if you're into fisheries, Brainerd's a pretty good place to be working. You know, Bemidji's a pretty good place to be working. A lot of places in Minnesota, a good place to work in that realm, that's for sure.
Yeah, a lot of water, and that's helped. It spreads out people, and people can make different choices about what they want to chase on a given day. And it's always interesting working with all the industry people around here you know, it's kind of a hotbed for that around here. So that's been fun.
I always talk about the fact that what I find really impressive about our area, industry people or just people who love to hunt and fish, not only are they very good at it and passionate about it, but they are smart. They know what they're doing, and they know the problems, and they know what they need to do to help keep the fishery going along. Very well-educated outdoor people in this area, I think.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. I've seen that, and it's like this is the testing grounds for new technology, and people get the word out, and there's the, you know, kind of the stronghold of the media outlets around here too. So that's been fun to learn from fellow fishermen around here and see these things develop.
So when it's your day off, you get to go fishing for whatever you want. What's your favorite thing to fish for?
Well, I really like chasing walleyes. I got an 11-year-old and 10-year-old, and they like fishing bass, and they like catching fish too. So sometimes we've diversified a little bit. We like to chase trout in the Cuyuna Country State Recreation Area, and expanding my horizons a little bit fishing with them.
Okay, yeah. Bass is getting to be a very, very popular fish, especially with the development of high school fishing and, of course, college fishing in our area, too. You're seeing a lot of kids being introduced to bass fishing early, and that, you know, we got a great bass fishery all over the state of Minnesota, but there seems to be a lot more people getting interested in that. I think a lot of it has to do with that competitive fishing.
Yeah, that's true. I think we've seen that trend here, too. That may be part of our future, and my kids might get into high school fishing here too in the future, so I'll be making sure, you know, Dad, the boat captain, knows what he's doing a little bit.
I had a few people tell me we'd had high school fishing when I was in high school. I'd have gone to high school.
Yeah, some great opportunity. Hope that continues and everyone is able to. Well, it's a great recruitment tool, so we'll see how that pans out.
All right. Mark Bacigalupi.
Kids really stick with it.
Yeah, I think once people fish, they get hooked on it to be real corny, but they do.
Yeah, that's true. And they figure out how and when to go and what to do when there's bad weather, and all sorts of useful skills out there that they're learning.
Mark Bacigalupi is the Brainerd Area Fishery Supervisor talking to us about the panfish initiative and the lakes that'll be affected in the Brainerd area. Don't forget, it also includes crappie in the Brainerd area, and it all starts March 1st. Mark, we appreciate you taking the time today, and have a great rest of the winter, and let's hope for a great spring.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. We'll do it again sometime.
This has been Fish in Paul Bunyan Country. It's sponsored by DS Beverages, your Anheuser-Busch distributor in Paul Bunyan Country, Clearbrook Electric, Timberline Sport and Convenience in Black Duck, Ace on the Lake on Lake Bemidji's South Shore, Bonded Lock and Key, your home for Liberty Safes, and Pepsi Nye Bottling of Bemidji. Check in again next week when we do it all again.